Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, in what way was Iberica Films, founded by German Jewish refugee David Oliver in 1933, innovative? This is the second of the two-part series that we're offering you to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Jewish community of Barcelona. Last week, Dominique Tomasov-Blinder spoke with us about the history of the Jews in Barcelona, and this week she'll tell us about the Jews who live there today. Dominique was born in New York and raised in Buenos Aires, Argentina, where she earned a master's degree in architecture from the University of Buenos Aires, and she's worked in this field in Argentina, the United States, and Spain, where she's lived since 1991. Since 1999, she's been dedicated to the study, preservation, dissemination, and advocacy of Jewish heritage. In that year, she created the Urban Cultures Project. She was also co-founder of the Heritage Commission of the Jewish Communities of Catalonia and of the Center of Studies Zahor for the Protection and Transmission of Jewish Heritage. One of her main areas of interest is the identification and preservation of ancient Jewish cemeteries in Spain, and she was instrumental in achieving landmark designation for the Middle Ages Jewish Cemetery in Barcelona. Dominique was a founding member of ATID, Barcelona's conservative Jewish community. Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Dominique. We are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Orthodox Jewish community in Barcelona, and you are a member of the Jewish community there, and I would like it if you would speak with us, please, about what the Jewish community is like today in Barcelona, what the different groups are, and how they've evolved.
Hello, Linda. Thank you very much for inviting me to Radio Sefarad English Corner. It's a pleasure to be in Madrid, not on the phone with you. And thanks for this opportunity. I'm one of the later comers or arrivers in Barcelona, but I have been involved in Jewish life since, and I think I more or less have an idea of how the community is made up of, what kind of people, when did they arrive, etc. So I belong to the Masorti congregation, ATID, but let me speak first about how the Jews come to Spain in what I call the new chapter in contemporary times, because for 400 years, there were no Jews whatsoever anywhere in Spain. If there were some practicing in hiding, it's you don't call that a community. So the first Jews that arrived in Spain came when the Ottoman Empire was starting to crumble down, the creation of the new Arab world and the different countries in the Balkans, and people started coming.
When was that?
That is, well, actually, that's 1917, if I'm not 1916, 1915, probably. But there were some, in fact, some Jews who come from Europe, from Central Europe, from Germany, a little earlier. In the very early years, 1905, we have two brothers, and this is research done by a historian in Barcelona, and that's how I learned about it. Edmund and Joseph Metzger, they come from Germany, and they are very active in importing equipment that is for industry, for science, that was totally unknown here, novelties for Spain, but this was coming from industrialized Germany. And they do a very good business. They import fire engines, which you should look at the newspaper clippings that you can find on internet. It's very, very interesting. Boilers and stuff like that. I mean, things that one would think it's the guts of something, and I'm an architect, and that's something you don't see. And X-ray equipment, dental equipment. They also open a hostel where they lodge and they give support to a lot of Jewish immigrants that start coming to Spain. To Barcelona, in this case. I'm saying a lot. I don't know how many is a lot. More than a million, definitely.
And I think that a lot of people don't realize that these were Ashkenazi Jews. People think of Spain as Sephardic, but these were Ashkenazi Jews, weren't they?
Absolutely. And when I present myself in the work I do and I say I'm Jewish, people think that I'm Sephardi also. But there's a lot of Ashkenazim who come to Spain, as well as Sephardim. We are not returning, we're coming. The Sephardim do say, and they can, they're more entitled to say, we are returning because the families had once been expulsed, or they had to decide to leave. Before the expulsion even, there was living and converting all along our lives here. In Christian Europe, it was not very easy to live, and Spain was part of Christian Europe in a sense. So, of persons who come from, individuals who come from the Balkans, for instance, I was very interested in learning that Danone yogurt was invented in Barcelona. And this is Isaac Carazo, who comes in 1917 from Salonica with his family. He rents an apartment in the old part of town, and he starts selling, he rents the ground floor commercial space, the storefront, and he starts selling the ferments of the milk. We are on the Mediterranean, but that was not traditional of this part of the Mediterranean. Yogurts and curds, except for Mató in Catalonia and maybe Burgos cheese, or there's no cottage cheese, there's nothing like that in Spain. And someone selling the ferments of the milk with the high properties for health and digestion, etc. It's very interesting. And then he partners with someone else and he starts producing Danone yogurt. I forgot to mention something about the Metzgers, which is very interesting also. They are part of the Mahers, of the founders of the Swiss school, which it's in the 20s, 30s, something like that. And the Swiss school was the first opportunity for Jewish families to send their children to a non-religious school or to a school that religion was not taught at. And remember that many of the people who immigrated into Spain, they had to baptize their children, otherwise you could not send them to school. And the Swiss school was the only opportunity until later. There's a French school, École Française, and there's also the Jewish school that I will refer to later. So there's other people from the Balkans. There are many who are tailors, to the point that this is something that was studied by someone else in Barcelona, a historian. There was a street in the old part of town called St. Paul Street near the Liceo Opera House, which was known to as the street of the Jewish tailors. These were Greek tailors working with shmatas. They were, I know shmatas is it's not a Sephardi word, but I did a whole Facebook entry about that, you know, Sephardi shmatas. And these were the Jewish tailors on Street São Paulo. And later, when, there are Jews coming after World War I from a Europe that was decrepitous, looking for opportunities. Again, Ashkenazim. And then during World War II. But before World War II, with the arrival of Hitler to power, there's a large affluence of Jews from Germany because the businesses are closed. Their profession is not; they cannot practice, and there are many who see Barcelona as a very progressive city, and you know, appropriate to come and start their and continue with their professional lives. And I can give you one name. There are many, and this is studied by another historian, which is interesting. That in the last, I'd say, no more than 10 years, there's been people tackling these issues, and we are going to have more and more information. David Oliver. David Oliver was the founder of UFA. If I'm not wrong, those were the initials. This is similar to MGM. And this was a film producing company. And he had many, of course, partners and employees. And his business is closed in Germany in the early 30s. So he arrives in Barcelona in 33. He rents space for the offices of his company. He founded Iberica Films. Iberica Films was a company that was in partnership with some local people in film in Barcelona. And he brought along many of his partners and employees. So he gave them the opportunity to continue working in Barcelona. The company was very innovative about the way they use the camera, the lighting. You know, I'm not in film, but, you know, different ways of approaching image, the treatment of images, moving images, etc. And they also had a subsidiary that was managing movie houses, spaces where they would show film, and a dubbing studio. This dubbing studio allowed them to dub Spanish film that they produced to other languages so it could be known in other countries. And they produced only 4 movies. You will soon understand why. And one of them, Doña Francisquita, it's not known to the English-speaking audience, I don't think, but for those in Spain, it's one of the most popular films from the beginning of the 1900s. And Doña Francisquita was one of their 4 hits. It was the most important one. Why did they produce only 4 films? Because when this country starts the Civil War in 1936, all these people that were coming from Germany are red all of a sudden. They're communists. They are considered as they escaped the Nazi regime, and they must be communists. So they are pressed or they are persecuted, so they have to leave. So he closed his business, not to mention that his dubbing studios were put on fire. It was some kind of an attack. You read the newspapers and they say still until today, this was not clarified. If it wasn't clarified, we can start suspecting what happened. So they went to London, where they continued with their activity, and this man ended his life in London, I think. I mean, he ended there. So from Germany to Barcelona and then to London. I understand his grandson is trying to do a documentary about his life. In the Cinematheque of Barcelona, there was a short interview that this grandson of David Oliver, who's not Jewish, because in the different, you know, with time passing, and there were many Spanish people in that room, and the person sitting next to me, when the interview ended, and they had shown some footage of this Doña Francisquita, I said, so what do you think, a Jewish person contributing to the best movie that was produced in those days? And he said, well, the way he explained it has nothing to do with anything. This is a Spanish film. And I realized that people don't understand what for us is so important. We want to know what we did when we passed through a place. We want to know if anybody will remember us when we are gone. I want to know that someone will remember me when I'm gone. And I always find it fascinating that some of the things that we use every day, we see every day, all of a sudden, this person who produced it is Jewish, or who had the idea is Jewish. I don't want to put that person on the Guinness Book of Records. I don't like those lists. But it's important because it shows that we arrive in a place, we try to adapt, we try to see what's necessary. And this happened to immigrants in the United States. They start selling brushes door to door. They end up with a, I don't know, vacuum cleaner company. It's something that's amazing.
I think that may have something to do with the fact that Jews especially have had to overcome more than other immigrants just because of being Jewish. There was that kind of extra burden. I think maybe that's where what you're saying is coming from.
It's possible. It's possible. I think that to begin with, any immigrant has not one GPS. We have antennas at the end of every hair because we are new in a place. We have to detect where to go, how to move around, who is who. And yes, I also think that Jews, but, you know, in my case, I did not go through much suffering. I cannot say that. And I also found something to do in this country, and it was something that no one gave me a job. I started on my own. And so it is partly what you say, and I think partly because it's the education also. We want to do some tikkun olam. We want to repair the world we find, and we have ways sometimes to contribute to it. So later there are many Jews who come, of course, during World War II, as I said, and there are many, and this many Spanish diplomats who saved Jewish people in different countries during World War II, and those people were able to make it through the war, or they were able to leave those countries and come to Spain during the war.
Well, now we're in 2018, and we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Barcelona community. So during this whole period that you're talking about, there must have been a functioning Jewish community.
You're absolutely right. So people started gathering, all these people, the Jewish tailors and Mr. Carasso for Danone and the Metzgers, all these people I mentioned. I don't know if David Oliver was involved in the community, the movie, the filmmaker. But they started gathering in associations. You could not have a synagogue in those days. You couldn't have you could not register any religious institution that was not within the umbrella of the Catholic Church. But there were periods of more and less tolerance, and they had met in one and another place. The Jewish community of Barcelona built a building where they are functioning since in 1954. And it's still a period when you are not allowed to register any religious institution. But they make it look a little bit like a school. It doesn't look like a fantastic synagogue. It's a very nice building, but it doesn't look flamboyant. And maybe it's something interesting to talk to one of the earliest members, because how could they build a building like that? But they have a building since 1954. And they had names that were not shul, no congregation, no temple, names that were Israeli friends or something like that. And this community also had already a possibility to bury in an area of a municipal cemetery that was exclusive for the use of the Hebrew burials, of the Jewish burials. And this piece of the cemetery was given in 1931. So this is during the Republic. And this is amazing, because they continued burying there. And then, of course, you need more room. There were two more areas, and there's only one that has room to bury now. So Civil War is over, Franco stays in power, and now Morocco recovers their independence. France and Spain withdraw from Morocco, and those from the protectorates they had there, and those Jews who are living there, the majority leave. And although they would all love to go to Israel, this is not very easy, because the Arab world would block any aliyah. Many come to Spain, many go to France, and everywhere else in the world. I'm sure that your audience will say, we know a large Moroccan community in our town. And they will arrive in a city where they are eventually outnumber any of the Jews who are in any of the cities in Spain, because they come all at once. And those who had been coming since the early 1900s, many had to leave. To give you an idea, there's a newspaper article from 1930s, before Civil War, 3-4 pages in a Sunday supplement or something like that, talking about the Jews in Barcelona. They say there are 4,000 Jews in Barcelona, and today there are no more than 5,000, of which, to be generous, 50% are involved in community life and 50% are not. So what happened? We are growing, and there were 4,000 in 1930s, and now there are 5,000. Well, many had to leave. They left because of the Civil War. They left because they didn't want to stay during the Civil War, and they left. Many came with visas that were only for transit during World War II. So you could not stay forever. With the death of Franco in 75, there's a very important immigration into Spain from South America. South America, in its most part, is under military regimes, except for Brazil. Hispano-America is under military regimes. This is the natural destination for people living in ex-colonies of Spain. And I'm saying Spain, but I say Barcelona also. And many among those immigrants are Jews. Of course, a small percentage, but substantial. And they settle in the cities where there's some Jewish life, not all, but if you want to participate in Jewish life, you have to pick where to go.
And a lot of them were secular. A lot of them wanted to participate in a secular Jewish life. And so they formed cultural associations, and they had all kinds of activities with their children and things like that.
I think that was absolutely, it was like that, but I think that was more what happened in Madrid. Mm. I know of Hebraica in Madrid. I don't know of any organization like that in Barcelona. Sorry, this we are now already in the 70s, but in 68, the Orthodox congregation started a school, which is now in its 50th anniversary this year. So 50 years of Jewish life in Barcelona, or the bylaws of the Orthodox community, 50 years of a Jewish school in Barcelona. So if you come, you're an immigrant, you come with children, you want to take your send your children to some Jewish school, you can only go to Barcelona, to Madrid, to Malaga, and then to Melilla, I believe. This is not very inviting in that sense. So yes, there are many Jews who are not observant and many who have other ways of observance. And there are new congregations that start shaping up. In 1992, Comunidad Atid, Congregation Atid, the one I belong to, was established. We are Masorti, conservative. In 2000, Chabad Lubavitch starts a center in Barcelona, and they're still there. And in 2007, there was a group that broke away from us that started Bet Shalom, which is a Reform congregation. I don't really know the exact number of members in each one. I can tell you we are 250 souls, my congregation. We have a very nice youth group and children group, nice number of B'nai Mitzvah every year. And from the 90s on, there's a lot of people who come to Barcelona. It's one of the most attractive cities in Spain to study, to do business, to take a sabbatic, to try their chance, their fortune here, let's say, to see if their work will prosper here. And many stay, many leave, and we receive a lot of visitors in my congregation. And there's, I would say, a rather normal Jewish life, especially because there's diversity. And there are many initiatives, though not like associations, as you said, but there's a Jewish film festival that's been running for 20 years. There's a recent creation of a group called Mosaica that wants to propose different lectures and a place where you can debate about different issues that are not so easy to talk about in congregations. We'll see. Everything is really alive, and things keep changing.
So Atid was really the first non-Orthodox community that started in Barcelona. How did the people happen to come together? How did you meet each other? How did you decide to start this? And can you tell us something about the people who were involved at the very beginning and how it's evolved now?
Atid is the first non-Orthodox congregation in Spain, not only in Barcelona. I always say we're number 13 congregation. There were 12 congregations in Spain functioning since the early 1900s or a little later. The first persons to have the idea to start a congregation were families from Argentina. Argentina has a conservative rabbinical seminary, the Latin American Rabbinical Seminary. Conservative Judaism is very spread there, it's very strong. And those families who came to Barcelona wanted to have a shul like the one they grew up in. And they started gathering. I was not here, I was not even in Spain yet. I was living in New York then. And they start gathering. Everybody knows someone else. Everybody knows someone else. They call them for Passover, for the high holidays. They invite a rabbi for the holidays, etc. And little by little, you know, it's a word of mouth. And being an immigrant, you usually welcome these opportunities of meeting with people that came to you. And it feels like an extended family. That's the way I felt when I arrived. I mean, I went to a Shabbat for the first time in my life, and I'm 40 when I do that, in Barcelona, because I come from a super secular background. And I liked it. I liked it, and everybody felt to me like they were family, you know, distant family. Of course, this later changed, but at the beginning it was very important until I got involved and I took a lot of responsibilities and made a decision that I wanted to participate actively. And one of the persons who was very important had an important role in the creation of this congregation was Luis Basat, a Sephardi man who was exposed to other ways of Jewish practice, traveling to the United States, for instance, and probably towards South America also. He's not so much active in his profession, but he was in advertising. And he had a lot, he made a lot of friends in the conservative Jewish world in the United States. He wanted a shul like that for him and his family in Barcelona. So he also participated and helped us. And he was a very active member and very important for the beginning of the first years. That's the way it happened. I was not there, I tell you, but when I was invited to the first Seder and the matzo ball soup tasted just like the one my grandmother used to make, I said, oh, I'm home.
What kind of a relationship does Atid have with other conservative communities in Spain and with the other communities that are in Barcelona?
We have a good relationship, very good, with the other conservative communities in Spain, but we are far away. We cannot really meet. I mean, that requires to travel. But if someone travels, they would go and visit the other congregations. We have good relations, but now that you're asking, we don't do much together. Maybe we should. That's another project on the list. With the other congregations in Barcelona, there's always the shul you don't go to, right? And we have good relations in diplomatic relations for anything that requires public participation and for activities or initiatives that we generate within the Jewish world. We get along better with the Orthodox synagogue. We try to share a lot of the cultural activities because this is important. You know, you need an audience, and if you advertise it together, then you'll reach a larger audience so that they benefit from the activities. It's a lot of work to organize every little thing, and you want people to take advantage of all that. And I'm sorry, I cannot say we do things together with Chabad. Of course, everybody goes to the Hanukkah in the government square, usually on Thursday is when they do it, on the Thursday of Hanukkah. And everybody goes there, and everybody is like part of a large family.
Is that organized by Chabad in Barcelona?
Yes, that is Chabad. When I mentioned Hanukkah, I thought you already assumed Chabad.
Here in Madrid, it's Centro Sefarad Israel that organizes it.
Yes, and in Girona, it's the city hall, and in Oviedo, there is a community. In Rivadavia, there's no Jews, and it's the city hall. I always wonder, why does the government have to light our candles? I don't really understand. But yes, it's Chabad. And in Girona, Chabad participates now because they're also there.
Does the Jewish community or Jewish communities in Barcelona have any kind of relationship with non-Jewish organizations specifically? Or does one thing just have nothing to do with the other? I mean, are any kind of cultural activities or anything organized in common with maybe some non-Jewish educational organization or something?
That's an excellent question. It reminds me, I have another thing on the list that I haven't ticked yet, because I don't think it's enough what we do along those lines. Non-Jewish people are welcome in our activities. Sometimes we do a book presentation with a publisher. We don't participate much in interfaith dialogue because there's not much going. When they call us, we do. But there's not much going lately. I don't notice much activity along those lines. I have to say no. Often, when I was more involved in the congregation organizing cultural activities, I often suggested we had to do this with the Association of Journalists or with a doctor's professional organization or with some other non-Jewish organization that has a relation with the topic we are going to address or the whatever we're going to present. And it's not too often that happens. And I think it's very important. I always think, you know, my first rabbi always, made sure to send us this message every now and then. we have to make ourselves visible because we're very few. People don't know who we are. People don't know what we do. We're not only interested in going to pray morning, afternoon, and evening, or three times a day. And it's not only the religious aspect of Jewish life. There's a lot of other things we do, and it's important to share with the rest of the society. I think there's much more that can be done.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.